at 8:17 on your Wednesday morning. In for Tommy Tucker, Ronald Sherpas joins us, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well, and, you know, NOPD every week sends us their preliminary crime stats, and we get them from the various organizations that track that, including the Metro Crime Commission, and they're really impressive right now. Every week, it's like, wow, murder down another 29% so far this year on top of double-digit declines last year. Any category you want to look at, with the exception of shoplifting, every reportable crime is down, down, down. And for someone in your position, it's got to be great to see that we're seeing levels of crime lower than most of us have seen at any time in our adult lives.
Well, I think it's wonderful news, and it should be well received. And the thing about this is crime is cyclical, I heard in your lead, and crime does tend to have peaks and valleys. And right now we're in a valley, and that's great news for the people in New Orleans and for the police department. The two things that have to constantly be under awareness, particularly by the political leadership, is if we're experiencing such low crimes at the same time we're saying we have so few police officers, then maybe we just need to recalibrate that and determine what is the correct number of police officers against the workload. I'm not suggesting 900 is enough. I'm not suggesting 1,600 is the right number. But whomever is going to be the next mayor must make that a priority to bring in some outside experts who know how to do this and can do it quickly. Secondly, I'm going to try to say this the right way. A dysfunctional police department can increase bad outcomes in crime because they're not doing the good things that they need to do. A functional police department can help reduce crime, but neither of those are 100% responsible for the crime moving in either direction. So in the case of a good department, which I think we are today, understaffed is the constant refrain, which could very well be true. Good results are occurring. I think that represents a good police department. But there are other things clearly that are going on as well. They're outside the control of the police department. And as I say all the time, Dave, it really boils down to this. If a police department could by itself end all murders, robberies, and rapes, we would have none. Police departments can't do it by themselves.
Talking with Ronald Sherpas, what are the top couple of things you think that the New Orleans police and the community at large have been doing recently for us to be able to enjoy these historically low crime numbers, the lowest in 50, 55 years, depending on which statistic you're looking at?
There's one thing that's very important. The science in policing proves over and over again that proactive policing can reduce crime and not just shift it from neighborhood to neighborhood, but actually eliminate it. Proactive policing is exactly opposite of only answering the police radio. I think the police department began to go towards more proactive strategies when interim superintendent Woodfork was there, because she said it out of her own mouth. She said, I want to get more proactivity behavior from our department to interrupt crime before it occurs. I have every reason to believe that Superintendent Kirkpatrick has continued that strategy. So, A, David, a police department that tries to interrupt crime before it happens proactively is always going to be more successful than the police department that's measuring how fast they get to crime reactive, which means you're just measuring how fast you are at being late. As it relates to the community, demographics change. If you have a huge cohort of young children coming up in conditions that are very disparate for them economically, socially, educationally, they can have impacts on crime. And going all the way back to Janet Reno when she was the attorney general, published reports that were predicting that these trends in crime would increase as some of these cohorts of children who are in really desperate conditions increase. I believe that. I've seen that happen in my career. So we could have a combination of a police department that's being proactive with the tools that it has. We should celebrate that. We might be seeing a drop in the number of at-risk children from very disparate conditions. And we also see a general change maybe in the way the city feels about itself. And then fourth, the bugaboo. When the police department has such a – the bugaboo is this, and you can't get around this. When a police department like New Orleans has experienced recently incredibly long wait times for response to calls of crimes that have already happened, across the country, Dave, people stop calling. And that can influence a crime total number, because if your car got broken into and the police said it's going to take 6 hours to get there, your neighbor says, I can't wait 6 hours. I'm not even going to call. That is a real phenomenon. It was a phenomenon when I was chief, and it's a phenomenon in our consultancy. So when we have very long wait times and the NOPD is still suffering with some of that, you can see a reduction in the total crime numbers, particularly around property crimes, because people just don't want to wait for the police. A lot of news, but you got to keep your eyeglasses on.
We're talking with Ronald Surpass. We're going to take a break and check on WWL traffic. When we come back, I'm going to ask him about some more specific things that the police and the community need to do to keep the crime numbers low so we don't see that cycle bring it back to the scary numbers we saw just a few years ago on WWL. The NOPD says fatal shootings are down nearly 50% this year after big drops last year. Carjackings are down another 37%. Non-fatal shootings are down 26%. Almost every crime category except for shoplifting down double digits as we continue to see historically low crime rates continue to go in the right direction. Ronald Surpass is our guest, and as a former chief, I know you study these trends and you see these cycles. Have cities elsewhere been able to keep these cycles from reoccurring, and once they get to these low crime rates, keep them low? And if so, how?
Well, that's the way it works, Dave, is you generally have trends that go across the nation. You can have one or two cities that might be operating opposite of the trends, but generally these trends across the country are the same. As crime goes up, it tends to go up across the country. It comes down with some notable outliers. The key to policing has always been in the last 40 years. The police are successful when they're proactively involved in partnerships with their communities to prioritize problem solving. It's the communities that need to tell the police, in our neighborhood, school zone speeding is a problem. The police need to respond to that, not say we have something important to do. In another neighborhood, it could be shootings. In another neighborhood, it could be daytime business burglaries. So when we see across the last 40 years of policing where the police work proactively in front of crime, positively in partnership with communities and businesses, they can identify problems together and attach solutions. Community policing fails if you don't have a community government. All hats need to go off to Andy Coplin, who was the CAO when I was chief. He, with Mayor Landrieu's support, gave the policing, community policing officers direct access to the city services to fix those problems that were making people feel uncomfortable in their community, coupled with the officers performing bravely and professionally. Our approval rates during that era was anywhere from 55% to 64%, because the men and women carried the message. The city could fix the potholes. The city could fix the abandoned lots that the police department identified in partnership with the neighborhoods. And Dave, what that ended up with is the partnerships in the neighborhoods created trust. If the police could help me fix this ongoing aggravation of abandoned vehicles and burned down houses and lots that make my children hurt, and the city puts the police in the beginning of that process at the top of the list to solve those problems, it returns support to the police when they need to go get more critical information about crime patterns, crime trends, and candidly, who are the crime people causing the troubles. It works. It works incredibly well.
If they stay in touch with the community and they're aggressive, not saying, oh, crime is low, we can let our guard down, maybe, just maybe, the next time we see that wave of increased crime across the country, New Orleans can buck that trend. Look forward to talking to you again about this and hopefully continuing to talk to you, Ronald Surpass, about lower crime in the city of New Orleans. Thank you. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, Dave.
He's Ronald Surpass. I'm Dave Cohn. And, of course, in 171 days, we're going to have a new mayor. The police chief has said she wants to stick around. We'll see if that happens. She's been really successful. Will she be here for the next mayoral term in New Orleans or not? Only time will tell. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about this new report that 1 in 3 Americans say they've slept with their boss. That's after the news on WWL. So we talked about the Coldplay incident where the cheating couple was exposed, and happened to be an employee and her boss who were caught on camera, and later we learned having an extramarital affair. Well, a new survey known as the Modern Romance Report that looks at people's relationship trends and how they interact with others, amongst the questions asked was, have you ever had sex with your boss? And 1/3 of those surveyed said yes. A much higher percentage admitted to at least flirting with a boss at some point in their career in an effort to try and get a raise, a promotion, or preferential treatment. And nearly half of those people surveyed said that they had had sex with, slept with, a coworker. Those numbers seem awfully high. 1 in 3 have had sex with the boss, and nearly half have had a relationship with a coworker. Tony Frana is the manager and a career expert with Bold, the professional networking site. Good morning, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing all right. When you heard these numbers, did that seem high to you, that 1 in 3 people have gotten it on with the boss and nearly half have slept with a coworker?
It is something that, the data certainly is very interesting. And I think what it shows, and as you just, kind of stated, a lot of these statistics that we found is that it certainly isn't something that is uncommon.
Yeah, I just wonder, 1 in 3, but now that's not in their current job. That's at any point in their careers, in their professional lives as adults. Either way, probably not a good idea to sleep with the boss, and definitely not a good idea for the boss to sleep with people who work for them, correct?
It definitely can complicate things, right? Because, power imbalances, can increase the risk of favoritism and, of course, ethical issues. And so it's really important to have transparent policies as an organization around workplace romances, if you will. I think that, we spend a lot of time at our place of employment when we are working. And so you're working with other people, and, when you work closely with other people, relationships certainly can develop, either, more intimate by nature or, just as friends and colleagues. And so I think that the key here is policies are key. And in light of recent events, maybe it's a great time for companies to sort of dive in and review those policies that they have.
Yeah, it just seems that the chances for things to go badly when the boss is sleeping with someone who works for them, either for the boss or for the employee, from the boss's perspective, if the relationship doesn't go well, clearly they're worried about human resources issues and complaints to HR or lawsuits or other ramifications. But likewise, for the employee, if the relationship does not go well, then are they in peril of being fired, demoted, not promoted, or treated poorly from the boss because they had this sexual relationship that ended for whatever reason? It just seems like there's a whole lot of risk for the boss and for the employee.
Absolutely. And, I think it definitely, just by what the conversation is, it complicates things, really quickly, particularly if things don't work out. And it isn't just the two people involved in the relationship. Workplace romance can really strain the entire team dynamics, even, the entire company, depending on the relationship, I suppose, and the fallout from said relationship. So it's really important, again, to, tread very carefully and to have clear policies. But policies are great to have. They have to be communicated and communicated really clearly so everybody understands, what the requirements are for reporting these relationships or navigating them should a personal relationship occur. That communication can, hopefully eliminate some of the complications that arise from relationships like this.
We're talking with Tony Frana, career expert with Bold. When we come back, I want to talk more about the interrelationships between coworkers and less about the boss-employee dynamic, because that's even more common, with nearly half of Americans saying they've had a romantic or sexual relationship with a coworker. What should you know if that's something that you become interested in, and is it something that you should try to avoid? We'll ask Tony Frana that after this. If you have a question or a comment, feel free to share with us on the Equinart Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870. We're back after this check on WWL traffic. The Modern Romance Report has found that 1 in 3 Americans say they have slept with their boss at some point in their professional lives, and nearly half say they have had a relationship with a coworker. I'm hearing on the Equinart Jewelers talk and text line from many people who are listening to this conversation who are telling me that they they met their now spouse at work and started dating because they were co-workers, and a lot of other people telling stories about big problems that have arisen in their workplace because of people sleeping together. Tony Frana is the manager and a career expert with Bold, the professional networking website. Tony, are you surprised that nearly half of people say they've had a relationship, a sexual relationship with a co-worker? And what advice do you have for people if they do seek to have a relationship with someone they work with?
Sure. You know, I'm not really surprised. You know, we spend a lot of time at work, as I said earlier, with, you know, the same team, the same people. And, you know, it's 40 plus hours a week if we're working full time. And you likely have, you know, things in common with the people that you work with because you're working on the same team or within the same organization. So even your job titles might be the same. You may be aligned with the mission and vision of the organization, and it might be something that's very aligned personally with you. So there is that commonality amongst coworkers that just naturally sort of falls into place when you work at the same organization. And I think, you know, as people sort of get more comfortable with technology, and technology, I think, you know, sort of, you know, removes some of those lines between casual and flirtatious communication, even just sending a meme or a GIF, you know, to somebody that you work with. So I'm not surprised by this, but I do think that it does warrant employees who decide to, you know, embark on a relationship that is more than just being colleagues, that they, you know, tread carefully, think everything through, and of course, refer to the company policies to see, you know, what the handbook says about having a relationship with somebody that you work with that is, you know, outside of work.
Yeah, because the last thing you want is to think that, well, this is innocent, we're friends, why not make it more than that? And then you end up either in the HR office or losing your job because you violated a company policy. I'd say about half of the companies I've ever worked for had a policy strictly banning coworkers from extra work relationships, that you could not date or have sexual relationships with people with whom you worked. But about half don't have such policies.
Sure, sure. Or the policy might be, you know, if you are to embark on a, you know, a personal relationship with a coworker, these are the steps you need to take to make sure that it is transparent. Because again, you know, it's more than just the two people who can be impacted by a personal relationship. And also, you know, depending on the dynamics of the team and, you know, who the manager of the team is, you know, is there favoritism? Is there not? You know, that there, it just brings a lot of questions to the table if people find out about it, you know, in a way that is a surprise to the rest of the coworkers or the rest of the team.
Tony, anything else you want to share with us on this Modern Romance report that has these numbers of a third of people having slept with the boss and half having had a sexual relationship with a coworker?
You know, I think being honest and understanding and knowing what the, you know, policies are at your workplace is really a step in the right direction to sort of mitigate and minimize any risk associated with these personal relationships.
Tony, thanks for joining us here on WWL. Have a great rest of your week.
You too.
Yeah, these numbers seem high to me, and it seems ill-advised, but, you know, the whole thing about the head and the heart and other parts of your body and what you're thinking with generally comes into play. And I guess ultimately I'm not surprised that nearly half of people have slept with a coworker. That one in three having slept with the boss does kind of surprise me, and that seems like a really, really bad idea. We're back after the news talking about drainage with St. Charles Parish President Matt Jewell.